When it comes to the origins of our language, politics, science, medicine, architecture, the arts, and religion, ancient Greece played an extremely influential role. Everything from democracy to the alphabet, libraries, standardized medicine, and trial by jury came from the Greeks. Today, we'll explore how Greek culture, the Greek-American experience, and the Greek Orthodox religion has had an impact on America. We're live at the location of Houston's original Greek festival at Annunciation Greek Orthodox Cathedral. Opa! It's time to learn, enjoy, and celebrate. Oh, and we can't celebrate without the food. We'll sample some of the incredible Greek dishes, all homemade. Plus, we're here to answer your calls and questions on all things Greek. 888-486-9677.
Town Square with Ernie Minous is made possible with support from listeners like you. Subscribe to our daily podcast and find episodes at townsquaretalk.org.
Hello, I'm Ernie Minous, and this is Town Square. We're coming to you live today from Houston's original Greek festival at Annunciation Greek Orthodox Cathedral in Montrose. We start today with the impact of Greek culture on America and the Greek Orthodox religion, which is the original Christian church founded in the first century A.D. Here with me today are Father Stratios Margulis, Magulius, I'll get it right. I got Stratios right, but anyway, he's from Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church here in Houston, and Father Stelios Sataris, who is with us from Assumption of the Virgin Mary Greek Orthodox Church in Galveston. And our phone lines, if you'd like to call us, 888-486-9677, 888-4-TOWN-SQUARE. I'm going to start with Father Stratios. I saw you do the sign of the cross before we began the show, and I've only ever seen guests do that when they think we're going to crash and burn over the next hour.
Well, we're called to pray before all things, and so it's only fitting that, you know, Father Stelios and I both just to do our cross, to say a quick prayer, to have a wonderful show, and to have a nice broadcast.
Yeah. Father Stelios, this was your church for many years, but now for the last 10 years you've been down in Galveston. There's camaraderie among the churches here, correct?
We truly are brothers in Christ,
yeah.
And we think of each other as brothers in Christ. So it's like I was here from 1995 to 2000, and I left. I went to Corpus for 13 years, and then I'll back here for 10. But it's like I never left.
Yeah, and I can tell that by the people coming up and saying hello to both of you. What I think I enjoy, and I should say full disclosure, I was baptized Greek Orthodox. This is my church. I may not be the best when it comes to attending, but this is my religion and my people. I notice a lot of people come up and are saying hello to you. There seems to be a very congenial relationship between the clergy and the flock, the people at the church. Is that something we'll find across the board when it comes to the Orthodox religion?
I would say yes. Again, it's our job as pastors, as priests, to minister to our people, and the best way to do that is by knowing them. And so how can someone confess to you, or how can you be there for someone at their hardest time when you can't even talk about the weather, talk about sports with them? And so it's so beautiful that we're able to have these friendships and these relationships with the people that we also can, that expand outside of just in the church to also as we walk around at the festival or at a coffee shop or around the community.
Yeah.
We are priests all the time, and it's a blessing for me to be a servant of these people. And they do, because of the relationship that we have as priest and parishioner, they do become like family. And so when they have a funeral, I'm sad just like they are. And when we have a baptism or a wedding, I'm happy just like they are. Yeah. So it truly is, we don't separate ourselves. Some people think we do, but we're not.
I will say for folks to understand, we're here at the Greek Festival because the Greek Festival is going on, so we picked this day to do our show about this. But also next weekend down in Galveston, you folks are having your festival also.
We're having our festival Saturday the 15th of October from noon to about 8, and then Sunday from noon to 5.
And this festival is going through Saturday night this year.
Through Saturday night. Today was from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and tomorrow 11 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Okay, we got the festival plugs out of the way. Now we can get into our conversation. We had an email that came in from Veronica, and I think she's challenging what I said in the open of the show. She says, the Western world attributes science, math, and astrology to Greece. However, Greek scientists studied in Africa. More exact, the Islamic city of Timbuktu. Any thoughts on that? Yeah, you can go. Both of them are passing it back and forth.
I don't have an answer for that. I apologize. Really don't.
Okay.
You wrote the intro, so you have to explain it.
Well, you know what I would say? They were the Greeks studying there, so it still came from the Greeks.
Greeks were studying, and there were many Greek cities, like Alexandria, all throughout Africa as well. Before there were countries, there were just cities that were associated with other parts of the world as well.
Yeah. Father Stelios, help me with another thing I said in the open, that this is we're at the original Greek festival. This is the original Christian church, correct?
Yes. Our church was founded on the day of Pentecost in 33 AD, and the founder of our church is our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. We don't say that in any pompous way. It's just historically true. Now, keep in mind that the Catholic Church was also the original church, because we started at the same time. There were five major centers of Christianity in the early church, and Rome was one of those, Alexandria in Egypt, Antioch in Syria, Jerusalem, and also Constantinople, present-day Istanbul, Turkey. So yes, we are the original church founded by our Lord.
And if my history lessons are correct here, so we were all one church until there was a split, and then Catholicism went one way and we continued.
So we were all one church until 1054. So for the first 1,000 years, there was only the church. There was only Christianity. It wasn't I'm this or I'm that. No matter where you went in the world, if you followed Christ, you followed Christ. And so for the first 1,000 years, we had unity. Now look at what happens in the world during that time. We have different languages really becoming popular. In the East, they were speaking Greek. In the West, they were speaking Latin. So that leads to a difficulty with communicating with each other. Also, there were different cultures and customs becoming into play. Likewise, at that time, Rome was kind of searching for more power and were able to expand as an empire to the West, while in the East, the eastern side of the Roman Empire was battling with the Islamic Ottoman Empire. Mm-hmm. And so with all of these factors going on, we then lead to the Great Schism in 1054, which really happened from a representative of Pope Leo IX, who placed a bull of excommunication on the altar of Hagia Sophia, the Church of the Holy Wisdom of God, in Constantinople. And then, in turn, the other four patriarchs placed a bull of excommunication on the West. And since then, we've had no unity. But still, at that time, even though they were quote-unquote separate, theologically, they were still very similar. It wasn't until the 1200s, 1300s, and into the 16th, 17th, 1800s, until today, we have a difference in theology.
Yeah.
That have been added in the West.
Father Stelios, a lot of folks are very familiar with the structure of the Catholic Church, looking to a pope as the leader. And when they look at our church and they look at the Orthodox Church, they get confused by how our structure is. Can you explain that?
Our structure in terms of hierarchy, or our pope equal to the, our patriarch is equal to the pope. Is the head of our church. He is located physically in Constantinople, present-day Istanbul, and he's the leader of our church. And now, granted, we have a different archdiocese and diocese metropolises, and so we're part of the Denver metropolis. And but, like I said, in the early church, there were leaders, the Pope in Rome and the four other churches. The leaders were called patriarchs, equal in rank right. with the Pope.
Father Stratius, when it comes to our patriarch, he is the first among equals, is how we see him. So there are seven of them, if I'm correct.
There are many patriarchates now, being there's the ancient ones that we mentioned, Constantinople, Antioch, Alexandria, Jerusalem. Now also there's Russia and many other patriarchs in the areas, but in the major Christian areas that exist today in the world. But he is kind of the chairman. He is the first among equals is the phrase that is used. So he's named first. He's named ecumenical, being that of all of them that are represented. But he is, again, the first, and he only has jurisdiction over his area. The Patriarch of Alexandria, who actually happens to be in the United States right now, he's in New York visiting the Archdiocese. He oversees the territories of Alexandria, which are all of Africa in various places. They work together, but they each also separately govern and administer to their people.
Is it the same religion?
Yes.
Okay. Change in our church is slow to come by in some ways because, as I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, they all have to agree. And to get a group of people to agree on anything is often challenging. And that's why we tend to carry traditions forward all of these years. Is that accurate, Father Stelios?
That is accurate. We, in our church, we have some change. I mean, doctrinally, we're the same as we've been when the church was founded. Different changes Here in America, we have a challenge with how to translate and different translations of the liturgy. And those are minor things, but it has remained the same. I'll give you a good for instance. We had to, when the airplane came into existence, we had to add the term when you travel by land, sea, or air. That wasn't written, you know, in the third century. It just wasn't. But we had to include it. So we have some changes, but not doctrinal.
We're going to be taking a break in just a couple minutes here. But Father, tell me a little bit about how the church is doing today. You were saying here at the cathedral in Montrose, Annunciation, that it's still pretty strong.
We are rocking and rolling, for lack of a better term. We have over 1,000 families here at the cathedral who are active and who are involved in the ministries. Again, every Sunday, the church is very full, especially on major feast days, of course, too. There's not even any room. When it comes to Pascha, to the celebration of the resurrection of our Lord God and Savior Jesus Christ, people are outside because there's no room to get in because we can't hold that many people. The church holds about 1,000 people, but we have 1,000 families. So it's a beautiful problem to have, and this is with the expansion. Yeah. So from ministries to Sunday school to even our basketball teams, we have so many people who are here for Christian fellowship and to receive the body and blood of Christ.
So what does that say about our community today, do you think?
I believe people are looking for truth. They're hungry. They're searching for the truth. Whether they have been born Orthodox and are just living the tradition of that has been instilled in their family, or if they are finding the Orthodox Church in recent times or through a spouse, the church is alive and is constantly thriving because of this need for consistency, and that is in Christ.
We are talking with Father Astorios of Annunciation Greek Orthodox Cathedral and Father Stelios of the Assumption of the Virgin Mary Greek Orthodox Church. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, a little about the Greek American experience and what that's all about. Plus, your questions, comments, 888-486-9677. That's 888-4-TOWN-SQUARE. This is Town Square on your NPR station, News 88.7.
Ρίξε ένα βλέμμα σιωπηλό στον κόσμο τον αμαρτωλό και δε σιγή πως καίει. Και με το χέρι στην καρδιά αν δε σ' αγγίξει πυρκαγιά ψάξε να βρεις ποιος φταίει. Σαν χαμοπούλι ταπεινό που δεν εγνώρισε ουρανό και περπατά στο χώμα.
I'm Ernie Manous. This is Town Square. Today we're live on location, Houston's original Greek festival, discussing Greek culture and the Greek American experience. With me is Father Astorios from Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church and Father Stelios from Assumption of the Virgin Mary Greek Orthodox Church down in Galveston. We also welcome your calls and comments and questions. 888-486-9677. That's 888-4-TOWN-SQUARE. Or you can email us talk@townsquaretalk.org. Father Stelios, I'll start with you on this one. A few years back, I did a PBS Pledge special about the Greek Americans, looking at our journey in this country. It's in some ways a newer immigrant group.
It is a newer immigrant group. Back in the 20s, there was a big push from the Italians and the Greeks to America. But then there was a big push in the 50s and 60s. And that's when I came to America in 1960 as a child. My father loved America. He was a merchant marine, and he fell in love with America. And when he had the opportunity, because he was a priest in Greece, he had the opportunity to come to America. He jumped on it. And it was the best decision he could have ever made, because to him, America was the land of opportunity. And it was a great experience. A person could actually have a family and have a living that where you thrived in America. He loved it here.
Yeah. Father Stradius, your story is a little closer to my family's. Back in 1910s or so, we came over in that early wave.
My great-grandfather came here in 1910, mm-hmm. 1911, excuse me. And he was a teenager, and he was his village chanter. And so that's one thing we actually have in common, Father Stradius and I, is we come from a family of priests. He was his village chanter. He came here to America. He met his wife, who was just from the neighboring village, but they met here in America at a Greek event in Chicago, and they got married. And he went and was ordained a priest here in America. He had 9 kids. 2 of his kids became priests. Not my grandfather, but then my father's a priest, and now I'm a priest. So we have 4 generations of priests who have been educated and ordained in America.
And Father Stelios, you've got a whole bunch of priests.
Got a whole bunch of priests. My grandfather, my father's father, my father, my brother, my older brother Michael, my brother-in-law Chris, and 2 cousins, and also a cousin that was a nun.
Oh, wow. So you've got them all the boxes checked there. When I say the Greek-American experience, Father Stelios, what do you think of?
My first thought of the Greek-American experience immediately goes to Greek dancing. I am from California. And in the California diocese metropolis, there is a very large and active Greek folk dance competition ministry. And so 3,000 plus young people from 5 years old to young adults compete every year in traditional Greek folk dancing, which is amazing and a whole different experience. We have some Greek dancing here, but it's such an amazing ministry that it's attached through all the churches. And that's actually how I met my wife.
Really?
We met serving the Metropolis Ministry to help plan the event. We met through that. And then, you know, here we are now in Houston, Texas, and I'm a priest, and we still get the chance to dance a little bit, especially here at the festival.
And so some people are going to hear us say, your wife, and the Greek Orthodox priest, they can be married.
We can be married prior to ordination. Yes, true. Which is really a great thing, because quite honestly, if I couldn't have been married, I wouldn't even consider being a priest. Because it helps us in our ministry, because we know what it's like to counsel people that are having problems with their children, or we know what it's like to stay up all night with a sick child. Mm-hmm. And so it helps us in our ministry as well as being fulfilled as a family as well.
And Father, wives play an important part too in the ministry.
Yes, they do. She is my rock and my support, and I'm so thankful for her. Oftentimes, especially during COVID, we'd go for walks and we were just talking about ideas, and I was able to bounce things off of her, which was so amazing. She also has, I mean, right now she's currently, I think, cashiering in the food line. So while she's important in my ministry, she also is an Orthodox Christian, and she is involved just like any other parishioner here as well.
The term presbyter.
Presbytera is the term for a priest wife. It's an honorary title that's given to them. She's like, no, don't call me that. It's fine. But presbytera is, there's not really a good English translation of presbytera.
It's a female word for presbyter.
Yeah.
Instead of presbyter, presbytera is the female version. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the success of Greek Americans in this country. It seems as though they got into some very similar fields. There was a lot of restauranting and a lot of dry cleaning. My family, dry cleaning route we came up through.
My grandfather, he had a tavern for a while. He had a bowling alley for a while. He was an entrepreneur, that's for sure. But you do see, and a lot of it is based off of philoxenia, is this hospitality, which is so beautiful, whether it's the food business, whether it's even somewhere to wash your clothes. Having that hospitality, having somewhere for someone to go to have some camaraderie and fellowship is so important.
Yeah. Father Stelios, thoughts?
I think philoxenia is a good word. Philoxenia is the fellowship to strangers. And that's what we do here as a church and what we do as a culture, have philoxenia, welcoming all peoples to our faith.
Okay, a lot of people, when they think of the Greek culture, the first thing they're going to think of is the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding. How much do they get it right? How much do they get it wrong?
Surprisingly, really pretty authentic. What's new to me, because being an immigrant, what's new to me is that is the Windex thing. I never saw that, but it makes sense because there's ammonia in it. But
vinegar.
But
vinegar.
what was very touching was how I know how Greeks sacrifice for their children. And at the end of the movie, he bought his daughter and his son-in-law a house, and it was paid for.
Yep.
So those sorts of sacrifices our people make for our family. So that's the Greek-American experience.
My mother's big problem with the movie was she has never seen anyone get baptized in a kiddie pool.
I have not quite seen a kiddie pool,
okay.
But I have seen what would be a horse trough, like a larger kind of, it was black, and some churches sometimes will use that and they will decorate them a little bit. Not quite a kiddie pool, but also in the Orthodox Church, we believe in baptism in the Trinity, in the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, with the use of water, it being immersed, not submerged, but being immersed. So also sometimes if an adult has not been baptized and they become Orthodox, mm-hmm. they will oftentimes just wear their suit and they'll bow their head over the font and the priest will pour water three times over their head. And that is still valid baptism. So that's what we see more often. Now, some churches, and again, especially in Greece or in Orthodox countries, have an adult baptistry, which is a large, almost fountain that can be stepped in where they can come in and step in and be immersed in the water. Yeah. But the kiddie pool thing was done, I think, for Hollywood. But we do sometimes see that in other ways, but in a little more beautiful than a blow up from Target.
I'm sure a lot of people know this, but if not, here's the breaking news. They are in Greece right now filming My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3. So there will be another chapter in that story if you want to learn more about the Greek culture in a very entertaining way. Father Stelios, when we think of the Greek American community, religion seems very tightly tied with it.
The reason for that is because it's our culture. Most everybody in Greece is Orthodox. And so when we came as immigrants to America, our experience was the church. The center of the community is the church. And so it's our culture, it's our faith, and it's how we connect with people. So that's very important to us in our faith and in our culture.
Father Stelios, but you don't have to be Greek Orthodox.
Just like not all Roman Catholics are Roman, not all Greek Orthodox are Greek. The Greek is really more properly, and we have it beautifully on our cathedral, it says Hellenic. It's the Hellenic thought. It's what the early fathers studied in this teaching. Greek was the language of the Roman Empire. To quote my professor of ancient Greek, Greek is the perfect language. It was all capitals. There were no accents. There were no spaces. You could just read it. But Greek, there's things in Greek that just you cannot explain or translate. What one phrase is in Greek is oftentimes a whole dissertation and meeting in English. And so the Greek is originally used because of the Hellenistic thought and the origins of the, again, language. The New Testament was written in Greek. But for us here at the cathedral, the Greek kind of plays as we were Greek immigrants who founded this church. But technically, you go to Jerusalem, it's the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate of Jerusalem. In America, we start seeing these things of, oh, I'm Greek Orthodox, I'm Russian Orthodox, I'm Antiochian Orthodox. We're all Orthodox, which is the beautiful thing. The same liturgy, the same teachings, and the same dogma.
We had an email question that came in from Joaquin, and he wanted to know, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that the Catholic and the Orthodox churches were fairly close to reunification in the 1400s. Do we know anything about that?
I believe they were never that far apart. The only issue that happened in the churches after the schism was the filioque debate. Where in the West they added the verbiage and from the Son, which is what filioque means in Latin, to the Nicene Creed, which was from the that was done in the West, while the East it did not have that addition. And so that really was the only theological debate that was happening at the time, but it wasn't until the 16, 17, 1800s we start seeing the doctrine of purgatory and the infallibility of the Pope being created as dogma in the West. Mm-hmm. So. And then even more recently, where they had Vatican II and some of these modernizations to the Catholic Mass, we did used to look a lot more similar. And even people here all the time, there are people who are 70 or 80 who say, oh, this reminds me so much more of pre-Vatican II and things like that.
Yeah. On that note, I'm going to thank you both for joining us today. Such a pleasure to have you both here. They're seeing all the food come out for the next segment, and it's like, wait, don't send us away now. But I want to thank the fathers for joining us. Father Stelios from Annunciation Greek Orthodox Cathedral right here in Houston, who's having their Greek festival right now, and Father Stelios from the Assumption of the Virgin Mary Greek Orthodox Church in Galveston. We also want to mention the Hellenic Cultural Center of the Southwest. They help in promoting an understanding of the rich history and legacy of the Greek culture by hosting lots of different events. You can find out more by logging on to hcc-sw.org. And now with more on the Houston Original Greek Festival is board member Donna Kantalis.
Hello.
Kantalis, am I getting the last name right?
Yes, it's
yes.
Dana.
Dana,
Dallas
sorry.
Great.
I got
Dana.
The first name wrong. I'm going to get something wrong every time.
With an accent, Donna, and they'll get me.
Donna. So, first of all, this is a massive event. How many people do you expect to be through here on the weekend?
We guesstimate around 30, We guesstimate around 30,000 over the course of the 3 days.
Wow. And okay, for people who are wondering, you said 3 days. We're used to there being a Sunday. Why no Sunday this year?
It's very hard. Well, it's been the last 2 years since COVID. Okay. And it's hard with volunteers and making sure that we have enough people here to staff to serve the city. This is all volunteer run, so it's a hard time to have those people here. We don't get them all here on Sunday. Everyone's pretty tired.
So if you're planning on coming on Sunday, don't.
Don't.
Plan to come tonight or tomorrow.
Tonight or
the
tomorrow.
Festival's going
yes.
on. And I'm curious the significance and importance. Whatever community I'm in, they have a Greek festival if they have a Greek church. Where did this come from? How come we are so involved in Greek festivals?
Well, I think that I don't really do festivals. I do this festival. So
yeah.
There's that. But I believe that I think it all started out just to share the culture and share the community and share why these immigrants kind of came across and just to hold on to what they had from where they came from. And the nice thing is we've tied it together and we've continued to carry it through all these 55 some odd years. Pretty very closely. We've grown and we've spread across the street, but we're pretty close to what we were before.
When you say you've grown, as I understand it, there was a period where there was some tension in the American Orthodox Church, and the monies raised here at the festival allowed you to build out because of the tensions going on with dues into the archdiocese, allowed us to become this massive structure here that is now the festival.
Well, I cannot talk to any of tensions and whatnot. I can talk to the fact that this is our church's largest fundraiser, mm-hmm. and we do, this goes to the cathedral, and it helps us to take care of things that aren't taken care of with dues or the benevolent fund and what we give out to different charities throughout the year or people in need or whatever is going on in the city that we'll be able to give from what comes from the festival.
So you can fund other things.
We can fund other things, help support other things in the city, in the country, whatever the archdiocese is looking for, the diocese, even whatever the city's looking for along the way.
Okay, trivia here. This is the largest Greek festival in the country?
That is the rumor. Now, I have not been to all of them.
That's the rumor.
Is the rumor, and I'm going to stick with that.
What's a Greek secret?
A Greek secret is something that maybe everybody already knows.
I heard you saying that yesterday. It made me laugh. So I'm curious, who are the people that come to this festival? Is it just your parishioners?
No. I think that, and more so than our parishioners, it's the city. I think the city really has embraced. We're in such an amazing location right here in the heart of Montrose, in the heart of the city, that we really get, not only do we get the city of Houston, but we get a lot of the surrounding suburbs, and people come, you know, they drive for the food.
Yeah.
They will, yeah. If you feed them, they will come.
And I know you're going to feed me shortly because there's a big cart full of food. And I felt very bad sending the fathers away as the food was rolling in. Sorry, guys. We've got a lot to taste there, too. Outside of the food, there are other things that go on here at the festival.
There are. We have an amazing dance program that happens. It goes on nightly. And then on Saturday, we have the kids program. So the youth of the community dances during the day. And then the young adults dance at night. And it's really, it's a cool show. It's, you know, the costumes are representative of the different areas of Greece. So are the dances. We do cathedral tours. We have, obviously, there's food and there's an agoda. So you can always leave with something, a little trinket to remind you what you were doing.
What was
here.
That last word?
A gift shop, a trinket.
There you go, a gift shop. There we are. Tell me a little bit about what's in the gift shop.
There's a little bit of everything. It's almost all Greek goods. We have everything from food, like you were in a Greek grocery store, on down to Greek jewelry, Greek sandals. Like if you're walking through a bazaar throughout Athens, there's a little bit of everything. Everything from like trinkets, icons. We have monk's wine from the Candelia Monastery in there that they make their own. We have a little bit of everything.
And there's one thing you sell every year that I always see people leaving with, and I don't know why it makes me laugh.
I know what you're about to say.
Olive trees. People just love these trees.
They do. And this is actually an amazing climate for olive trees, which I think is so funny. But I always giggle, especially when we first started and you would see people carrying out these massive trees. Like they'd have they'd have a couple bottles of wine, they'd walk out with a tree. I was like, well, there's that.
Okay. So. Yeah, and I know someone came every year and would buy another tree for their olive orchard, I guess, they were building somewhere. The other thing that's interesting, too, that people get an opportunity to see is to go into the cathedral and visit it. If it's not your religion, to come in and learn about the Greek faith.
And it's really nice because the priests do take time to give a little dissertation on the Orthodox religion and how this church started. And this year it's really special too, because since our expansion, we recently installed new iconography inside the cathedral. So it's really nice to be able to see that. There's two little mannequins with the priest vestments on it, so they're able to see what the priest's outfits are during service. So it's a nice way to sort of learn really why we're here and how we started.
Yeah. Well, you know why I'm here? The food. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to try this food. We are talking with Donna Kantalis.
Yes, sir.
There we go, from the Original Greek Festival, and we'll continue this conversation live from Houston's Original Greek Festival. Our phone lines are open at 888-486-9677. That's 888-4-TOWN-SQUARE. We're about to sample some amazing food, and if you go to our Instagram account, at Town Square Talk, you'll be able to see pictures of everything we are about to sample. Make sure when you go there, you decide to click and follow us. And to ensure you never miss an episode, you can subscribe to our podcast, Town Square with Ernie Manoos, wherever podcasts are available. This is Town Square on your NPR station, News 88.7. I'm Ernie Manoos. We'll be right back.
Περιστέρι που μετέ στον ουρανό, πάμε να βρούμε ένα αστέρι σε έναν κόσμο μακρινό. Σπιτάκι μου και φτώχο καλυβάκι μου, χώμα που γεννήθηκα ποτέ μου δεν σαρνήθηκα. Σπίτι μου, σπιτάκι μου, αγιά τρεχτό μεράκι μου, κι αν τον κόσμο γύρισα κοντά σου ξαναγύρισα.
This is Town Square. I'm Ernie Manoos. On Monday's show, in honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, we celebrate the rich heritage and gifts of Mexico, Central and South America, and the islands in arts, politics, and economy. You can email your questions now to us at talk@townsquaretalk.org. Today, we're live from Houston's Original Greek Festival, and if you're interested in the music we're playing, most of it's Nana Mouskouri, one of my favorite Greek singers and one of the best-selling female recording artists of all time, a Greek singer. We are also talking with board members Dana Kantalis, who's joining into the conversation with us as we talk about food. So we have to have Donna Doxaxis. She is a board member from the Original Greek Festival. Did I get the name close to right? Doxaxis?
Yes.
Now, you're American, married into a Greek family.
That is right, yes.
But you've been there a while.
I've been here quite a while.
Yes. So do you feel Greek now?
Yes.
Yes, you do feel Greek. I have to say, I was here last night, and I think the food is better this year than it has been in lots of years. Nothing against how it was in the past. There was just something kick up this year. What am I tasting different?
It's all the same, and we're very pleased to say that it is ever, I'm getting the same response from everybody. It just seems a little better this year.
What do you think that is?
Maybe we were away for a year and we're back.
Yeah.
And all of our hard work is paying off.
Dana, I mentioned this to you earlier and you were kind of like, yeah, you're hearing that too.
Yeah. I am hearing that. I think absence makes the heart grow a little fonder. Maybe it does the same for taste buds.
Well, you've brought me a whole bunch of stuff to taste.
Yes.
But I want to know the recipes that we're using here.
Yes.
Where are they from? Whose recipes are these?
It's pretty much a combination of our parishioners. And we have been using this same recipes for years. Very little change is done.
Just like in the Greek church dogma, things stay the same with the Greeks.
Exactly.
Oh, I know that I have a whole bunch of stuff here in front of me to try, but I am going to start with the loukoumades because I know they're warm, and I've been told. So what am I about to eat?
It's a yeast-based, very similar to what you would consider an American donut, and it has a little extra kick with the ouzo.
There is.
Yes.
My mouth is full. You have to keep talking. My mouth is full.
And they're best, like you said, you're eating them warm, and that is their best time.
That's the best. That's why I kicked it to you first. I was like, yeah, you need to start here. Mm-hmm. Even that's not really a sweet appetizer, is it the way to go, but they're still so warm.
Well, my dear friend Cleverly Stone, a food critic who's no longer with us, always used to say, Ernie, when you sample food in the media, you always take too big a bite. And I did that again with a Luca Mavis. I ate a whole Luca Mavis, and it filled my mouth. But now I'm okay to move on forward with it. I didn't know about the ouzo.
Yes.
Why do they put ouzo in it?
I don't have that answer.
We really have an answer.
We like
that.
To think it just adds a little extra something special.
Yes. That's the way it's been done. So
that's the way we continue to do it. Greek pastries also tie in a lot to our holiday celebrations.
Yes.
I know that we have what you're calling the sweet bread, but it's kind of like the Easter bread, isn't it?
Easter bread, New Year's, there's a sweet New Year's bread also, but this is more like the Easter bread.
Yes. And it's a braided bread.
Yes.
You can buy it in the gift shop. Do you have it here in the festival itself?
Oh, yes. It's a pastry
booth,
yes. Mm-hmm.
There are some other, I know I'm supposed to go to the food first, but I'm all over about the pastries. Tell me about what's on the tray in front of me.
You have curabiedes.
My favorite cookies.
Yes.
I've loved those since I was a kid.
Just don't take a deep breath before you eat them.
They're kind of like Mexican wedding cookies a little bit just because of the powder on top, but they're a shortbread cookie, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and kind of an almond base to it, is that right?
That is correct.
And then you have?
Finicia.
Honey cookie, right?
Yeah, some call it honey cookie, yes, yes.
So what is that made up of?
Well, it's have fine nuts, it has a little bit of whiskey in it, and your flour and butter.
I'm noticing a trend here in our pastry.
And it's then after it's baked, it's set into a syrup.
And that's what's so yummy.
Yeah.
Of course, probably the most well-known and popular of the Greek pastries has got to be baklava.
Your baklava, yes.
Tell me about what makes a good baklava that is edible but not too sweet.
Oh, I feel like that's a magic question.
Sweet.
You got to find that line, though, don't you?
Yeah, but it's layers, you know, it's bottom layers of phyllo that are each buttered. Then you have your layers of nuts, and then your top layers that are buttered between. It's usually 10 on top and 10 on bottom with the nuts in between. And
cinnamon, sugar, some syrup.
Syrup.
No booze in this one?
No. But you can drink it with, you can eat it while you're drinking a little bit of booze. Yes.
You can do that too. And then, of course, there's this braided shortbread cookie.
Yes, could have
Tell
Not
me a little about
I
that.
I mean, Kulurakia, I'm sorry. Yes, that one is always a favorite with tea time and coffee. And like you said, it's butter and it's flour made of dough. And then it's twisted and baked. And that's it. This one's not dipped.
But it is delicious. Yes. And I think it hits the perfect point of sweetness to satisfaction. Yes. I do think sometimes they can go a little overboard. So you got to find that very. Dana, what's your favorite pastry?
My favorite pastry is the finicia. Yeah.
Really?
Hands down.
That
I will
would be perfect.
Skip baklava for a bite of finicky any
See,
day.
See, it's my least favorite, so we can get a pastry box together.
We're going to
we'll
do really well
happy.
Together. Indeed. I think also my grandmother made it, so it was one of those, it's a taste that has a memory attached to it, which I think goes a lot for a lot of the things that are here.
Curabiedes, curacao, that's what my grandmother used to make every Easter, every holiday, we'd have those. And so those are that's my memory. For some reason, she wasn't a big baklava baker.
Not many are.
We can all agree on that part.
It's definitely a piece of work to get that baklava together. Yeah. That is a labor of love, for sure.
A lot of people think Greek cuisine is difficult to make. Oftentimes, there's quite a few steps to it. I've started trying to make it myself at home. It's time-consuming, but it's not really that hard, I wouldn't say. What do you think?
No, not at all. Not at all. I guess you would say time consuming. I just think of it as, you know, you go in, you have different parts to it, like take pastizo.
Okay,
you have
I
to
will.
You have to macaroni, you have to do your meat sauce and then your crema that goes on it. And it's just a process and it very quickly happens and it's a good dish. It's worth all the work.
A lot of people refer to it as a Greek lasagna.
Yes.
But it's a little different.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Okay, it's the meat sauce. Mm-hmm. And our meat sauce, most people would be very surprised to find under cinnamon in it. And in some of the Greek meats, you do find cinnamon and allspice. That gives that little bit of flavor difference.
Yeah.
And it has onions and tomato sauce.
But not heavy in tomato sauce.
No.
Which is what's really nice about it.
Yes.
What I think this year I noticed about the pastizo was that it has a softness to it, a gentleness to it, both in texture and flavor.
Yes.
Is that something you look at? From year to year, do you look at what comes out and kind of tweak a little?
That's the best.
Yeah, okay. We're into the secrets here now a little bit. What are you? Where are you on pasticho?
Pasticho's an easy, not, I shouldn't say easy to make, but it's a good, easy comfort food, so to speak. It definitely has that lasagna home feel to the heart, so to speak.
Each part of it's is easy, you know, and then you just put it together.
Right, you've got the,
you stack
certain
it up.
Macaroni,
yeah.
Which is a longer, wider noodle, a rounder hole,
yeah.
Like a, like a thick macaroni, longer macaroni. I'm trying to find the right words, and I can't.
The kind of macaroni you make a necklace out of when you're in preschool, that's yes, the kind that's of macaroni right. That's in the pasticho.
And then it's the meat layer, then you have more pasta, and then you have the bechamel sauce.
Well, bechamel goes into the bottom layer, you stir it into your macaroni, and then have your meat, put the top sauce on, then you also add a little bit in that, and then you put the top sauce.
Secret to a good bechamel.
Stirring.
Take your time. Stir that.
Take your time is most.
Take your time. I've kind of tried to recreate it, skipping bechamel, and just kind of doing it as a pasta dish with this being the meat sauce. And let me tell you, I like the way that tastes.
Yeah. Well, the flavor's there.
The flavor. Yeah.
So there's. I mean, I get it. I get why you would do that for sure.
But I'm not a festival, and if you did that at the festival, they would come after you. I think they'd be very mad. Another one, a very classic dish that we all love, domalvis.
Yes.
I love domalvis. Tell me the secret to yours. And what it is, because people may not
seasoning.
Know.
Seasoning. We have meat, rice, basil, dill. You know, lemon juice is a very important part of it.
And it's all wrapped in a grape leaf.
Wrapped in a grape leaf, and then we put olive oil, chicken base, and more lemon juice over it, and bake them in the oven.
Okay, again, the secret to the amount of lemon. I've made them at home. Sometimes it's not enough, or I get way too strong, and it's kind of got a bitterness to it.
And that is what you develop according to your taste buds. Some people don't like as much lemon, and the others, you know, more the lemon, the better.
So when you're cooking for thousands of people at a festival like this, how do you know what the right level is?
Well, we worked out a recipe. We have one that's measured out the amount of olive oil, lemon juice, and chicken base, and water that goes on it. And we have stuck with it, and it has been successful.
For people who are curious what we're doing right now, we are at the Original Greek Festival here in Montrose, which is going on through tomorrow evening. And we are talking with Dana and Donna, and they are talking about the food and the festival. And if you have any questions, our number is 888-486-9677. That's 888-4-TOWN-SQUARE. Okay, I got a bone to pick with you guys. You ready for it?
Come on.
This isn't Greek salad. You got lettuce in it. What's going on? Have Americans warped us so much we have to put lettuce in our salad?
I did a little research on that.
Okay, thank you.
And this salad appeared in restaurants. It's more of a modern thing because it was requested. And, you know, the traditional is the cucumbers and tomatoes and feta. And they
a salad want, without the lettuce.
Yes. Right. And so this came about, and what I found out is modern time people demanding the lettuce.
Yeah, and I think people would be shocked if you served it without the lettuce here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love it and all of that. And there's also the Greek dressing. If you want to make Greek dressing at home, what's the secrets to it?
It is your amount of oregano, garlic, and your olive oil to the wine vinegar. Usually it's a 3-to-1, you know. 3 olive oil to 1 wine vinegar. Then there's garlic, dried mustard, oregano.
Oh, dried mustard.
Just touch of dry mustard, salt, pepper, and it's.
And then you can put that on any salad.
On any salad.
And they'll all be wonderful.
All
wonderful.
Long. You can put it on toast, Ernie. Come on.
I'm forgetting the name for the meatballs.
Keftedes.
Yes.
I've had them before. Mm-hmm. This year, again, they popped. I think in the past, the deep frying of them or something dried them a little. These seem not so... Well, they seem more traditional.
We bake these in the oven because of the number we make. You know, we have 12,000. You can't fry all of those. So,
I'm going to sit down and make 12,000.
Yeah. And they have mint along with salt and pepper and a little Worcestershire in them. And that mint gives them just enough little... an onion, a little different flavor. And that's traditional.
Dana, for folks who are used to coming to the festival and on their ticket, you get, of course, your admittance. Then you get a second ticket that can be either be a souvlaki, which is the meat, or you can get a pastry box.
Correct.
And then the third ticket was always the dinner plate. It's different this time.
So the dinner plate, we found sometimes people came through and they wanted two pieces of pastizio and no spanakopita, like they didn't want the spinach. Or they wanted akiftedis and spanakopita and tiropita. So we found that it's best to please.
Or me, no tiropita, two spanakopita.
Exactly. So this way, as opposed to just making the equal amount so that we could have enough dinner plates to go around, we've adjusted to sort of figure out how we can get everyone is the happiest when they're going through the line. So we've taken the a la carte concept and put it with the dinner plate concept and sort of mixed them together. So the third portion of the ticket is the equivalent of an old school dinner plate. If you wanted to go that route, minus the salad, and then you have the option of moving forward with making two spanakopitas or two tiropitas on your plate.
No, no, I'm two spanakopitas.
Oh, you're two spanakopitas.
No,
my bad. I'm not going to sell you two cheese. I'm going to give you two spinach.
Thank you.
But you have the option of doing it however you want. So it makes it a little bit easier for the masses, and we feel like that way everyone's a little happier.
Yes. I'm going to go to the spanakopita now. What I love about our spanakopita here at the festival is that it's individually rolled. It's not a tray where you had to cut it, because then no matter how you cut it, it falls apart, and it's always a pain. I don't know why people don't do it this way in the real world all the time.
Slides out the side.
Yeah, slides out the side of it.
Yes.
You do it this way for ease, or is it just a traditional way to do it, too?
Well, more for ease and handling it'd be and in serving it, it is, like you said, it's a pillow package, and it's we started doing this, and a lot of homes, a lot of people have also done it also. You're right. It's using a big pan, but for the ease and the no crumbs.
Right. Except I'm getting crumbs all over me while we're talking.
But Philo, it flies a little bit with the wind.
Yeah, well, it's a festival. It's supposed to be like this. All the recipes that you folks use are available in a book here.
Yes.
I'm curious, though, if I'm only for my family, and you're used to cooking for 12,000 of something, have you adjusted the recipes?
Oh, yes. All of them are adjusted to family size.
And they are the actual recipes you use here?
Everything that's served here is in the book. There's a few other recipes that come out of the community, but primarily we have all the festival recipes in it.
And folks can get that book when they come to the festival?
Yes, they sure can.
They can get it at Pastries, and they can get it in the gift shop.
So
depending on where they're walking.
Well, we've added the food line this year and also in the Agora.
So you can get it all over the place.
All over.
All over the place when you're here at the festival, which we absolutely love. Dana, something people should not miss this year at the festival in your mind.
Oh, Ernie. The dance program's amazing. I walked through there yesterday and they're just on target. They're on target all the time. It was just a lot of fun. I think I've missed it. I feel like even though we had last year, there was so much with all that had gone on in the world, that it was just really nice to see everyone there this year. So that's really nice. First program's tonight at 6:30, little plug. And then I also think there's a couple, this is once a year. So I feel like there's a couple things. My favorites are definitely the Lucumadas, which I guess I was biased and had you start with them.
and I loved it.
And then I would definitely go down your road of spanakopita if I was picking my first routes.
Yeah. Of course, the other thing that I know people have, I just saw someone walk by holding one, and I started the day with a Greek coffee, a frappe, and I've been buzzing ever since. We've got the traditional Greek coffees here.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Give me a little more on that.
And there's a little buzz to it. You're right. There's no alcohol. There's no booze in it.
There's no alcohol in it, yes.
Yeah, no alcohol there either.
It's a strong, very fine ground coffee.
Nescafe?
Not Nescafe, but
whatever you can. Close enough. I mean, if you were making it at home, that works. Yeah. That's what I do at home. Nescafe, but not here.
Sugar. Mm-hmm. But you can get it without sugar if you request. Mm-hmm. But that.
Or you can get it with extra sugar, as I have found out. I always check in on that. Yeah. Everything is wonderful here. It is. It's great to see the festival back up and back to its glory days.
Yes.
The food is fabulous this year. Thank you so much. And I want to thank you both for popping in and chatting with us today.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to Dana and Donna for joining us today. Dana Catalis and Donna Doxaxis, who are both board members of the Houston Original Greek Festival. We also want to thank our priests from earlier, Father Estradios, and from Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church in Houston, and Father Stelios from Assumption of the Virgin Mary Greek Orthodox Church in Galveston. Remember, the Original Greek Festival continues today until 10 p.m. and tomorrow 11 a.m. until 10 p.m. at Annunciation Greek Orthodox Cathedral. Cathedral in Montrose. For more information, you can go to GreekFestival.org. And don't forget, Galveston's Greek Festival is next weekend at the Assumption of the Virgin Mary Greek Orthodox Church. For more information on their festival, you can go to GalvestonGreekFestival.com. If you missed any of today's show, remember Town Square. It's available as a daily podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Town Square Talk. On Monday's show, we are going to be celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month, so you won't want to miss that. That's on Monday, 3 p.m., right here on Town Square. And remember, you can always email us, talk@townsquaretalk.org. For Houston Public Media, I'm Ernie Manous. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk again on Monday.
Town Square with Ernie Manous is produced by Jennifer Altide, Ernie Manous, Mariana Navarro, David Pittman, Lisa Rosborough, Brenda Valdivia, and Houston Public Media. The opinions expressed by guests and callers do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff, management, or underwriters of this station. Medical opinions should not replace consultation with a medical professional.